Well, we all know that family can have quite a different meaning in Alaska than in other places. Today, a deeper look. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. When something goes wrong in a household and the state has to intervene, children get placed in foster care. Is the system in Alaska adequate? No. The number statewide and toll-free, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, and Anchorage, a local call, 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. What do we do about foster care? That's the subject today on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. Volunteer firefighting is a rewarding and extraordinary way to serve your community. It takes dedication, sacrifice, leadership, as well as mental and physical stamina. Emergency calls throughout Alaska continue to rise, but the number of volunteer firefighters continues to decline. Learn how you can experience the excitement and satisfaction of becoming a volunteer firefighter. Visit asfafireline.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska State Firefighters Association.
Well, this one's likely to generate some phone calls, so you might want to get through early once the thought occurs to you. The telephone number again for Talk of Alaska, statewide and toll-free, 1-800-478-8255, and Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, and email is talk@aprn.org. Foster kids, we're talking people, like real people here, and how are we doing in Alaska? With me is Amanda Mativer. She is... Are you the founder of Facing Foster Care in Alaska?
Yeah, I'm one of the founding members.
Well, so that's a provocative title, Facing. Are you saying people don't face foster care?
Well, we had a group of youth in foster care who actually named our organization, and it was just something that they thought would be catchy. People would start listening.
Yeah, I guess so. So it wasn't you. Was somebody else thought it up?
Yeah, it was one of our members from Juneau.
Uh-huh. Now, I understand you have an office, actually, in Covenant House?
Yeah, it's at the Covenant House Community Services Center.
Well, that's pretty appropriate.
Yeah.
I think we'll go ahead with you, Les, State Representative Les Guerra. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here with you and Amanda.
You are a well-known advocate for foster kids, foster care, and all that sort of thing. And so how long have you and Amanda been working together?
We met each other about 3 years ago. We were on separate tracks. I was trying to figure out a way how to make progress in the legislature, and Amanda was doing the same with Facing Foster Care. And we thought, wow, it's sort of like a Reese's peanut butter cup, sort of the chocolate found the peanut butter. frankly, with just a legislator pushing forward or a bunch of legislators and nobody in the community, it doesn't work, and then vice versa. So Facing Foster Care has been a crucial part of this whole effort.
So maybe you can tell me what is the there's a problem here?
Well, I mean, you know, we have 2,000 foster youth statewide, over 30% of them end up incarcerated at some point. Less than 10% nationally go to college. The stats we can't believe are any better here, possibly worse. 37%, according to a recent University of Washington and University of Alaska study, end up homeless at some point coming out of foster care. And if you look at the efforts the state has statewide, we do good at the first part, which is removing children from the abusive situation. We do, I suppose, as well as can be expected. I suppose people can criticize the efforts of the state there if they want, but they do as well as can be expected there. But there's a second part of foster care, and that is after you remove them from abusive parent, what do you do? And that's the part, that's the mystery that a lot of states haven't solved. Well, you help them stand on their feet. You help them succeed. Because a foster child who ends up going to college, ends up in job training, ends up in work, is more humanely treated than one who ends up in prison. And it's cheaper for society. So it's cheaper, it's better, it's smarter. And that's the part that states haven't done so well at. You know, we yank them from the family. But taking somebody away from their parent isn't good enough, right? That's not the solution.
No. That's really just the beginning. So are there enough foster homes for kids?
Amanda knows this. There are not enough foster homes, and part of our effort has been to do a PR campaign to get more foster families involved, especially in the Native community. The Alaska Native community is overrepresented. About 1,200 of the 2,000 foster youth statewide are Alaskan Native youth, and you know, it's, I think it's good culturally to have somebody from your culture as a role model. So we do need more. Well, we need more foster parents in every sector, frankly. But there has been, at least according to OCS, a special need in the Alaska Native community.
Les, I want to get your story. You grew up in foster care.
Yeah, I was six when my father was killed. He was a doctor in Harlem, and one day somebody broke in, killed everybody in the office. My father, the 80-year-old gentleman who ran the office, I think one of the patients too, looking for drugs, we think. Nobody ever caught the guy. And from then, my brother, who was 17, and I grew up in foster care. He, of course, was only there for a year or two, and I grew up in New York in a foster home.
So are you still in touch with that family?
The parents have passed away. I am in touch with my foster siblings, and I have two natural siblings. You know, oddly enough, you know, foster families are told not to replace the natural family. The goal is always to reconnect the child with the natural family.
Well, it's not adoption.
Right. And yeah. And so, you know, frankly, my foster family, and this is an important thing for people to understand, they sort of severed contact after I left when I was 18. I maintained contact. I'd call a few times a year, go see them around Christmas.
But in a sense, this was their job.
Right. Their job is not to, you know, a lot of foster families see their job as what they're told their job is to get the child through the hard time.
Yeah. So, and then you also say, but I'm one of the lucky ones.
Well, I suppose, you know, I was. I had, you know, by the time I was six, the whole idea of education was, I suppose, important to me. I remember my father reading to me. I had a brother and sister who were college track. So my sister was 18 and in college when my father died. My brother was on his way to college, and I was, you know, I was told I had a couple hours of studying to do every day, both by my siblings and then by my foster parents, and that made a difference. I mean, I think that's really no different for foster youth than youth who are not foster youth. When you have family members who've been through college, you're more likely to go to college. You know, I made it. I sort of worked my way through college, and that. And
where'd you go to school?
Boston University as an undergrad, and then off to law school at Harvard. So It all worked out okay.
Harvard Law.
Yeah.
So now you're in the state legislature making, what, $80,000 or something like that?
That would be nice. I'm not here to gripe about my salary. It's good enough.
No, I know. The other thing that I'm getting from getting your story, Les, is that you I'm getting to see why you're also such an advocate for education.
Well,
it seems like it's almost in your blood.
It's the great equalizer, right? I mean, you know, if you could get everybody through high school and either onto a vocational ed or college, everybody would sort of enter the adult world on equal footing. If you have a system where 29% of your youth go to college, a lot don't even get job training, who's going to succeed and who's not?
All right. I think it's time for the pitch here. You wanted to come on the show to talk about foster care, and you suggested Amanda as a guest. And the reason is that you want the public to understand that you did have some success this year in the legislative session. But that could be undone by veto pen.
Right. We have no belief that the governor is necessarily going to veto anything.
No.
But obviously, I think we do want the public to understand the importance of moving ahead with an improved foster care system. We made huge steps across party lines in the legislature this year. Amanda was a huge part of it. She came down and educated folks the last 2 years. Probably the biggest steps in terms of improvement of the foster care system since I've been in the legislature.
Could you be more specific?
Sure. We focus this year on the part that says after we take the foster youth away from their parents, what do we do? And the transition into adulthood part of the foster care system is weak in this and many other states. We've established a reform that says youth coming out of foster care, if we can, should be paired up with a mentor. There are a lot of people out there who want to volunteer their time. And when you come out of foster care, you have no responsible adult link. Most youth have no responsible adult link. The best thing you can do is link a youth up to a responsible adult link. And so we want to start mentorship for youth coming out of foster care. Right now,
I've had friends that were CASA volunteers, and this is an actual part of the legal system, as I understand. And they serve, I guess, partly in that capacity, but more specifically in terms of the interface with the legal system. Is that right?
They volunteer and help youth through the legal system as the youth spokesperson, and then many of them act as mentors. Frankly, they go beyond the four corners of their responsibility.
Yeah, that's my perception. But you're talking beyond this formal arm of the court system.
Right. I would say most youth don't have a CASA, and we're talking about Amanda made this point to me, which is the most important part is the transition. The biggest gap is in the transition. And so that's where the whole idea of mentorship came from, which is, you know, youth need to have a responsible adult link that tells you how to get a job, that tells you have to, you know, put in 110% instead of 90%, that says, you know, there's college aid here or there's a vocational training here. Give me a call if you have a problem.
So you've got language in the budget, and you've also got a new bill through, right, that changes the age?
The studies show that states that have extended foster care, for those youth who need it, not every foster youth, but for those youth who need it, if you extend it to age 21, the educational outcomes are better, the homelessness outcomes are better, the life outcomes are better. Some youth have gone through 16 foster homes, you know, so they come out of a situation where they've been, let's say, sexually abused or physically abused by a parent. They had a rotten home situation. Then they go through 5, 10, 15 foster care placements. You know, you're not going to be ready at 18 to stand on your own necessarily. Some will be, some won't be. And if you're not, we want you to have a responsible, adult, safe home to live in until you're ready to go. And the states that have extended foster care to 21 have done well.
Amanda Mativer, you facing foster care in Alaska, you get to look at kids with problems all the time there at Covenant House. Anytime I go by there, you know, there's a bunch of young people around there, and around the transit station seems to be a favorite place. Do you get the feeling that this budget items that Les was talking about and that this bill are going to make a difference?
I think they're going to make a huge difference. There's funds in there to transport youth so that they can stay in their school of origin, so the school that they were in when they came into foster care. Because, as Les mentioned, that you might have a young person who's got 15, 16 different change in home placements. Well, they might be changing schools with every change in home placement.
And so even at 18, they have
all these other things playing against them, plus they're behind on high school credits and just falling through the cracks in every area. So at least having a stable school environment is a huge deal.
Yeah. So that would be part of it. Do you think the age thing is an important factor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Extending care.
So in other words, there you personally know of kids that have basically, what do you call it, limited out or aged out?
Aged out.
Tell me about that.
I aged out, but I extended care all the way to 20. I went to the max, and then I actually didn't move out of my foster home until I was 22. But I was lucky in that I had foster parents who stuck with me, and I was able to go to college and live there and just have that family support system that a lot of our youth don't get.
Wow. So did you get down to the level of being on the streets?
I never did, just because I had one placement, one family, and people who just treated us as if they were their, as if we were their own. But a lot of our youth at 18, it's time to go. Or they get that itch that they're 18 and they want to be on their own, and they're so tired of all the services and everything that the system is throwing at them. And there's a lot of barriers in place. it's really difficult if you're in foster care to get a driver's license and do, I guess, normal things that normal young adults and teenagers do to make that transition to adulthood.
Why would it be hard to get a driver's license?
You have to jump through hoops to get it. It's a liability for the state.
And I can tell you, I mean, I had my foster family, their job was not to teach me how to drive, right? So,
It just wasn't their job. I see what you mean.
They were good folks, but not a single driving lesson, right? So, you save up your money and you buy a driving course. But even the smallest things are not as easy as they are for some others.
Well, so what do you think will remain to be done if all this gets through, Amanda?
I think there's always going to need to be worked. Yeah. There's always going to be stuff that needs to be done. But I think this is huge in terms of what's actually going to, if it passes, what the changes it'll make in the lives of our youth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, I mean, with the lack of foster homes, that's always going to be an issue, especially for teenagers, and especially in Anchorage. We have the highest number of children and youth in foster care in Anchorage alone. So that's always going to be an issue. And we have teenagers who they're bouncing around because there's no placement. And so they come into care and they might be placed at Covenant House and awaiting a foster home.
So Covenant House becomes placement. Now, I understand the governor is signing a bill today authorizing Covenant House to take more people.
It was a technical glitch. Covenant House called me, Senator Davis, in the middle of the session and said the feds are enforcing a rule that says you can't house more than 20 youth in a runaway shelter. And so Covenant House was about to lose its funding. And the exception was if state law says you can house more than 20 youth, you can house more than 20 youth. So we just had to technically change the law really quickly. And Betty Davis did a great job getting a bill passed very fast.
So do they have empty beds over there, Covenant House?
Well, I think it depends on what time of year it is.
Really?
In the summer, it's, a lot quieter.
Uh-huh.
Just because a lot of the youth will go and camp out in other places, and a lot of them couch surf. And one of our youth deemed the term foster homeless, being in foster care, but you don't have a home.
So if I were to walk through the transit center with you, would a lot of people recognize you, say hello and so forth like that?
A lot of the youth, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they'd wondered who I was.
Yeah.
So do they have a culture? And when you said runaway place, is that the intent of Covenant House? Is it just for runaways?
No, it's to keep youth and young adults safe.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I guess you're saying that it's adequate to that, or is it? Could it be bigger?
I think it could be bigger.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. So, I mean, I'm just sensing that you don't want to talk about how we don't have anywhere near the resources to deal with this problem. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, it's true. I mean, that's just absolutely true, right? For example, we have 10 college scholarships to go to the University of Alaska for foster youth. And, Amanda and I keep running into the 11th who didn't get there in time to get the 10th scholarship, right?
Uh-huh.
Why would you do that, to someone who's had all the disadvantages in the world? So we've added some college scholarships in the budget this year. We've added money for job training because most youth, whether foster youth or not, in this state, don't go to college. And so we've said, well, what about job training? What about AFTEC? What about charter college? What about the Career Academy? And so there is, for the first time, if the governor allows it through, for the first time there will be some state funding for job training for foster youth. Right now we accept $115,000 in federal funding, but the state's never matched it. And we're going to say, we'll put a little bit of state money in. I mean, every dollar you put into job training is a dollar that's going to make somebody more successful and less likely to be on the street,
mm-hmm.
More likely to be productive to society. Even if you don't care about the sort of morality of the whole thing, it's cheaper.
So how does this all feed through the Office of Children's Services somehow? Does this all go through the health department and the OCS, and that's where kids will find out what their opportunities are and so forth?
Yeah, the Office of Children's Services runs the foster care system. I think, given the staff that they have, they do a good job. The social workers that we know work really hard.
But apparently what you're trying to do is give them a bigger toolkit.
Right. They have a transition program for youth coming out of foster care. The problem is it's a Band-Aid. The amount of staff they have for the 500 youth aged 16 to 21 who OCS has a program to focus on to get youth on their feet, into jobs, into school, to get their GED. For those 500 youth, they have 4 workers statewide. That's 125 youth, a social worker. You know, the general standard in social work is you're supposed to carry a caseload of 10, 15 youth. Even let's say you can handle double that, but 9 times that amount, it's at some point you have to communicate with these youth by email and you're not having one-on-one counseling with them.
So I don't want to give the listeners the impression that this legislation solves this problem.
We're going to add 2 more transitional social workers to the 4 statewide staff we have. I don't think it's enough, but shoot.
So that's 6 for 500?
That's yeah. 6 for 500. You know?
And they're unevenly dispersed, too. So there's 4. There's one in each of the OCS regions, but the one with the largest region, she's located out in the Matsu Valley, and she works with youth from Matsu all the way out to Bethel, the Aleutian, down the Kenai Peninsula. That's her region. And I think she has close to 170 youth that she's working with, and these are all youth. Once they turn 18 and get out of the system, they're in crisis because they're ending up homeless or incarcerated. And so it's, yeah.
Hmm. In legislative speak, it's hard to add staff members. The 2 were the most we could get. We certainly would have liked more. But I think if we can show that 2 make life better for these youth and that they're still not able to do the job, then we'll have a better case for saying maybe we need a few more. But it's been a vastly understaffed section of OCS. And again, the focus is always...
Well, I'm putting myself in the position of our listeners who I'm sure some are saying to themselves, where is this going to end? Where's the bottom of this thing? I mean, people are scared of this with the university. How much money could the university ultimately suck up? You know, how much money could we throw into our, when would it ever be enough? And it seems, you know, with 500 kids, somebody needs to go back and look at where are they all coming from? What's the situation that's giving rise to this and these cultural factors, too?
Sure. But, you know, if somebody's going to say we're putting too much money into the foster care system, they don't know the foster care system. It's band-aided together. It's staffed by people who are overworked, underpaid, and the results are a 37% homelessness rate for youth coming out of foster care. At some point, I suppose you could have an overstaffed foster care system. Alaska doesn't have one. It's not even close. I mean, you tell me that one social worker is supposed to handle 120 kids.
I wouldn't dream of that.
I just
see a really huge mountain in front of us, I guess. Les.
It's silly. I mean, you know, as a parent, you know you have a hard time breaking through to your own kid, right? If you send your kid an email and say, this is what you have to do the rest of your life, do you think it's really going to work? Or do you have to repeat the message face-to-face 100 times? Well, when you have 4 staff for 500 kids, you're doing it by email. How successful is that going to be? Gee, you can email somebody rules on how you apply for financial aid and hope they follow up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, would your own kid do that? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. Well, also, it occurs to me that the shine-on factor is immense in a situation like that. You know, generally speaking, when you're a kid, you dope out the system, that you don't feel a part of the system, so you dope out how to game it. And it used to be so laughably easy to game this system, it's not even funny. That's
sure.
The way it seems to me. Okay. So I want to turn to this issue, Amanda, because this is blew my mind. I didn't know, and you know, Les puts it, well, we need to get to where we're sending more to college than to prison. And you know, in terms of cost, actually, that's an improvement, right? Cost-wise, that is an improvement. But still, what is it? What is sending kids in the foster care system to the wrong side of the law? What are the factors?
I think it's what Les mentioned, is that they don't have a connection to an adult in their life. They don't have a connection to anyone. We have youth who have nowhere to go on Christmas. They have no one to call. If they get a flat tire, they have absolutely no significant adult in their life. So they age out of the system to just being on their own. So there is no one to call on. There's no one to help them. And for a lot of young people who get out on their own and say, you know, maybe something happens and they screw up and fall through the cracks, they can go back home usually or call mom and dad. But our youth don't have that option. And so what we're seeing is we're seeing youth who are, even those who are getting into the university with the scholarships that are available, they're not making it past the first year because they just don't have that support system in place.
Wow.
I think this is where the mentorships really come into play, just to have an adult in their life to tell them, you know, it's time to do your taxes, and this is where you go. Just an adult, somebody there to hold their hand and give them advice.
So the peer system doesn't do that, obviously. But, I mean, there's got to be – there is sort of a community of kids on the loose, though, isn't there?
Well, a lot of – like with our members in Facing Foster Care in Alaska, everyone's in that transition age. And so everyone sort of acts as a support network for each other. And we have youth who, say, double up. We've got like three in a one-bedroom apartment right now. Mm. So they sort of lean on each other, but I don't know that that's the best thing either.
Right. Yeah. So it's not as if there isn't a culture of some sort. It's just simply that it's not adequate.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere near.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's try some calls. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. Dawn in Palmer, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been a foster parent off and on for many years, and when 5 years ago, I adopted a child, a son, who had been in foster care for 5 years, and he was 10 when I adopted him. And he recently disclosed to me that he had been raped by a teenage boy while he was in emergency foster care.
I don't think that's an unusual tale, unfortunately.
No, it's not. Well, this is the unusual part. I have called OCS intake all the way up. Every social worker I can remember, I dial random numbers. I got a hold of Tammy Sandoval's office. I haven't had one person call me back. I called the governor's office. They did call me back and said that somebody from OCS would call me back. They haven't called me back. And my concern is that this individual who had an emergency foster care license still has people in her home. And she's not doing emergency foster care, as far as I can tell. But now she's doing guardianships of disabled adults. And, you know, there was hundreds of kids who went in and out of this house. I know there was. And if this child, my child, was raped violently, that's what he remembers. Dark room, shed, big boy, and he said, it hurt, Mom, it really hurt. And now he's 15, and he needs to develop normal relationships, and he's afraid to. And, you know, I'm like, okay, how do I get OCS to respond to me in a healthy way to research the other children who were in this home and see if this happened to other kids? Because there's a predator out there, and we need to figure out how to protect. This was supposed to be the safe place.
Yeah. Donna, you've given a very personal and eloquent testimonial. I mean, obviously the system has safeguards in it. And this is not supposed to happen. So let's ask Les what might have broken down here.
Don, actually, if you'd call my office, if there's a foster family out there that's still taking in kids that is like that, can you call my office and we'll take a look into it? 269-0106.
I would be happy to.
Thank you. You know, the my heart goes out to the families, to the youth, and to the social workers who their caseloads are so big, they get to do a quarter of the work they believe they need to do. They deal with the most visible crisis, and they're on to another thing. And it's hard to look at some of the caseloads some of the social workers have. I mean,
And then I'm thinking about the providers, the foster care providers, and if there's problems there, you know, who's really watching over them about things like this? They're just doesn't appear to be the oversight there should be.
It's all hard, right? And before people think it's unsolvable, Amanda and I, folks at OCS, we've all said, you know, there are things that have worked in other states. Let's focus on the things that work, right? And that's where we focused our changes on. We, you know, ripping ideas sort of out of the hat and saying, let's try this. You don't have enough money to do that. And before sort of anybody yelps and says, God, you're going to hire two more staff and get mentors for kids, that's too expensive. The amount of money for all the foster care reforms we put together, less than $1 million, You know, there's a road on Golden View Drive we're going to upgrade for $8 million this summer. That's in the budget. I'm not saying it doesn't need to be upgraded, but for a tenth of the cost of a road upgrade, you can make huge progress in the foster care system. It's about prioritizing. You know, the Anchorage Port came in and asked for $10 million this year. By the end of the session, they got $20 million, you know. There's no doubt that we need a port expansion, but at some point, the millions get thrown around pretty easily in government, and you have to prioritize. Find the cheaper things that make a bigger difference, and this is a cheaper thing that makes a bigger difference for right now.
Yeah, your task may be to show that it is a bigger difference. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about foster kids, the foster care system in Alaska, with Amanda Mativer and Les Guerra as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
Mentoring for kids in the foster care system. There's an attempt in the budget to upgrade that, and we have two of the advocates for that with us on Talk of Alaska today, and we're discovering that the foster care system is, I guess you would say, threadbare. It's under-resourced, as it were. This often happens in Alaska. It's Talk of Alaska, the telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and email talk@APRN.org. And we're open for your calls from Joanne. Thanks for the great and timely topic. Mentoring our youth is one of the most important things we will ever do. All children need more positive adults in their lives. In Alaska, when we look at our student dropout rates, youth drug abuse, and the high number of children living in non-traditional family, not with two parents, our ability to mentor children can really shape their future. Big Brothers Big Sisters of Alaska provides positive adult mentors to children all over the state, regardless of family structure. Our little brothers and sisters live in foster care as well as more conventional households. I hope your listeners will consider mentoring a child or youth through Big Brothers Big Sisters. I hope, too, that foster parents will enroll their foster children and help them find the additional support they need. Thank you. Yeah, Big Brothers, Big Sisters probably works pretty good, don't you think, Amanda?
Yeah.
Yeah. So where do we go? What do you think your organization, Amanda, facing foster care in Alaska, will look to next if you're successful here in the budget item and legislation that Les managed to get through after two, 3 years struggle?
I think we've already sort of delved into what we want to look at next, and that's focusing on permanency.
Permanency,
so that youth aren't aging out of the foster care system, so that they're getting a permanent family before they leave care, and that they're not facing all these issues that youth face when they age out of the system.
It's such a vague word.
Permanency, meaning that youth are either reunified with family, placed in guardianship, are getting adopted, but
so
they have a
so
permanent
closing.
Forever family. They're closing the case out, and youth know that legally, you know, those are their parents, and they're going to be in that home forever. And I think what we've gotten from a lot of our youth, and something that I believe in, is that permanency is the best gift that you can give anyone. And what's happening now, and the reason why a lot of our youth are aging out, is because when they turn 16, they enter into the OCS the independent living program, and so it becomes a focus on life skills and what their plan's going to be as an adult rather than focusing on getting them a family.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm liking what you're saying, because my sense is that the emotional need doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we even have some of our members who've been adopted as adults, and so it's obviously still important to them even in their, 20s. They still want that connection to a family.
So is this a national campaign or effort?
Yeah, this is happening across the country. States are looking at identifying, permanency early on. And I think one of the big problems here is that we have social workers who are turning over. And so each new social worker that takes on that case.
Now, you can understand why they're turning over, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Each new worker that takes on that case, though, they take it on as a new case, and it delays that timeline to permanency. And Alaska has some of the slowest timelines to permanency in the nation. And so I think it's important to start focusing on making sure that youth are connected to a family.
So it's another budget item. I'm seeing more budget items. Don't you think?
Jail's a budget item. Prosecutors are a budget item.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up.
If you want to keep paying for that, if you want to keep paying for misery and danger in your community and unsafe homes and unsafe neighborhoods, have at it. That's just not the right solution.
And I think it can be done at little cost, because we can encourage foster parents, like Dawn, who called in and said she was a foster parent and then became an adoptive parent. We can encourage foster parents to take on that role.
Hmm. Well, are there some households, I've seen households actually, where they take quite a few foster kids in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some that take in whole sibling groups, which is great too, because when you keep siblings together, things are going to be a lot more peaceful too.
All right, let's go all the way up to the north to Deering, Northwest Alaska, and Marlene. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Marlene. Good to have you back on.
Yeah, good morning. My first concern is if anybody's thinking about having any kids, if they're going to be getting a situation where they're taken care of, they should think about it wisely. But my concern is we had some foster kids going to our village, but the woman was not from our village, but this woman made trouble with the other people around town and using the foster kids, and then one of them got pregnant, and she graduated when she was pregnant but they all left, while the husband was alive, he kicked him out and they moved someplace. And I feel sorry for these kids. I always wonder how come nobody never took on these kids. One time they were small, I passed them going to, before we get new post office, I was passing them too. They were on the road and they were just on their knees, they were making funny noise like birds, real funny noise, like I was in a different world. But I feel sorry for how come child support don't, or child, the people don't go after these kids in their homes. Because I know before that woman moved here, they were alcoholics for many years and were numb. And those kids now, they're all gone and from here, but so she sounded like she adopted them, and those kids were, I sort of felt sorry for them. How come people don't take care of their own kids, like that? I was thinking they got something gonna happen to somebody's kids yet, and I think that they had troublesome lives too here.
Yeah, Marlene, I want to thank you for your call.
The other one is on child support issues. I have a concern about. I hope they should have it mandatory. They do blood tests for. kids.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be something? Yeah. I think you'd find a lot of support for that. Marlene, I want to thank you so much for your call from Deering. You know, so here we have a village and, you know, basically one foster family and just not a very good one. It didn't work out real well, you know.
Well, thanks, Marlene, for the call. I think you make a point that Amanda started to make, too, which is, you know, you probably don't need any of the things we're talking about if you have a stable home in the first place, right? So the first goal is to get you back with a stable family that you can live with the rest of your life. If you have a loving home, you don't need the state support at some point, right? And that's why we've been pushing to recruit more foster families. We have an inadequate number of foster families, and if somebody has it in their heart to take in youth now, call OCS, because a lot of the problems disappear once we have enough stable, strong foster homes. You can't have the system where we have foster homes that have too many kids. The kids rotate from one family to another family to another family and can't get the attention they need. A loving home is the answer to a lot of these problems.
Yeah, and Marlene also made the point about the community. You know, and I think even in Anchorage that there's a point there. I mean, it's my sense that the kids around the transit center in downtown Anchorage, they're feeling like throwaways. They're not feeling real welcome. Am I accurate in that perception?
Yeah, a lot of our youth, especially those who are coming out of care, struggling with depression. And even when you're in care, you don't want people to know you're in foster care because it's embarrassing. So usually it's something that you hide and don't talk about because it's sort of like stigmatized. I remember telling a friend and they were like, oh, well, what'd you do? I'm like, well, I didn't do anything.
Yeah, what did you do? I think that's a real good point. What did you do?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
And a lot of times, too, it's people in the community being able to understand the issue because you might have... I remember I had friends whose parents said, you shouldn't hang out with her. She's sort of like a bad egg. And uh-huh. I think that's what a lot of our youth face, too.
Right. Yeah. Well, Marlene is, you know, watching children that are simply not being properly taken care of and wondering why the village is putting up with it. What's good? Good perception.
Sure. One of the reasons why this is solvable, Marlene also talked about the parents who just mm-hmm. don't seem to do what they need to do as parents, right? And the thing about fixing the foster care system is you can blame the parents, and there's every reason in the world to blame a lot of the parents out there who are not doing their jobs, but you can't blame the kids. And if you're going to say, we're going to leave things the way they are and we want to blame the kids, you cannot blame the youth that come through these situations.
Yeah, that's that line from Elvis's restaurant keeps running through. Kid, what are you in for? Nothing. I didn't do anything. What did you do?
Well, it was littering them.
I didn't do anything.
He littered.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Robin, joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Robin. Thanks for calling.
Thanks so much for everything everyone's doing. This is a huge issue in Alaska.
Obviously, it's a bigger issue than we are so far able to handle.
Oh, completely. And, you know, one, I just want to really commend the idea of mentoring. I think that's a brilliant idea. In the end, one-to-one relationship is the most healing thing for all humans. And kids need it. It's part of their developmental needs. So
yeah, and I think the point that Les made was an awfully good one, too. Is like, it's not like the first time you tell your kid you need to do this that the kid does it.
No. And it's in relationship that they learn how to do things. Having information isn't the same as knowing how to do something. So I think that's brilliant, and I want to commend that. I have a couple things that I'd like to get out while I can.
Please do.
My experience, I worked social services in Anchorage for a few years, and my experience was that the funding is so tight and the lack of foster homes or care for the children is so extreme that I literally saw tons of children who were in extreme abuse situations who were not only not removed, they were rarely investigated thoroughly. And there was just no place to put them.
Yeah, and I think we saw that even some of the places to put them are questionable. As one of
our and they
college,
certainly
yeah.
are. It's clear. It doesn't, taking troubled children and getting money in return doesn't, it'll attract the best of the best and the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
And we end up with the lightest and the brightest homes, and it's a crapshoot on where the kids end up. And if they're cycled like they are, they'll hit them all, which, you know, gives almost 100% abuse probability. So a couple of things that I've noticed that I really think would be helpful. One is if they really focused on better identification and prevention. If families who were identified as being under stress or children who were in unsafe situations were moved into a system where they were assessed for drug and alcohol, that they were assessed for domestic violence, and they were given supports and intervention. I know that says on the front page of the website, and they've got brochures that say that that family preservation is happening, but I think what happens is until they can quantify and take in court, those cases get let go until the child's been harmed enough that they can take them, and that's a matter of completely stressed, underfunded system.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, a stressed system and falling through the cracks, I think, is what you're talking about.
And
yeah.
So many kids would be best served by really strong family preservation intervention. Another thing that's out there that I saw in Santa Rosa, California, is there was a children's village in Santa Rosa that I walked over and checked out and talked to some of the people who worked there. And it was a new concept, and it's kind of like an orphanage, but they were townhouse homes with foster parents, and all the kids lived together. And they had a huge gardens, and the social workers came to the central community office for appointments rather than sending the kids around like chauffeur from office to office.
That's kind of innovative. What do you think about that, Amanda?
I'm really big on having youth in a family setting, and ideally making them feel as normal as possible. So I guess being out in the community in a family setting is ideal.
She's lukewarm. She's lukewarm on that.
Yeah. That the quantity of children that actually need intervention and care might, you know, if we can maximize family preservation and then we can maximize for children who are removed into home placement early, and the kids who don't make the first or second cut, if we could move them into a situation where they're in community, because as you said, they pull together in community anyway because of shared experience.
Yeah. All right, Robin. I want to thank you.
Yeah, well, I thank you very much. And it's there's no great answers, but I think there's a lot of innovative things.
Well, you got some really good suggestions. It's a good diagnosis. I really appreciate it. Voice of experience. Thank you, Robin, from Homer. And Les, I want to ask you this one quickly. Is there something that can be done about, I mean, we've talked about the situation that maybe some of the foster care providers are not the best, that maybe there's lapses in screening and so forth. But I've also heard in rural Alaska that people who might have had a problem at some point and then straightened out and might be the best foster care providers can't qualify.
Yeah, now there are problems like that, and that'll be one of the things we look into this summer with OCS. There are rules aimed at protecting youth. Let me give you an example. You have to have a house up to code because you don't want to have a child live in a fire trap. Well, guess what? In Queethluck, you might not have the building materials to have your house up to code. All of a sudden, you've lost the best foster family in the world.
Right.
You've got to be flexible about that stuff. The goal is not to run through a checklist. The goal is to provide youth with the opportunities that youth in a normal family have.
And, well, it's interesting. It seems like what you're saying is that it's all too easy when you're in a stressed agency to go by the book, perhaps. And what you seem to be trying to do is saying, okay, here's more tools, here's better guidance.
Sure, and we've bit off a very small part of the system to try and fix this year, but it's so meaningful, right? And the permanency issue that the last caller raised is huge.
Yeah.
And that is a goal in all 50 states that's not achieved very well in most states, to establish permanency and a stable adult early so kids don't bounce between 10 foster homes.
All right. Well, we're getting down to it now on Talk of Alaska, so it must be we're in the last 10 minutes and need to take another break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. and by BP, helping unlock Alaska's energy potential.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about foster care and what seems to be an inadequate system. Let's go to Harry, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Harry.
Good morning.
Harry Crawford. Representative Harry Crawford.
It is.
How you doing?
And I just wanted to say, I wanted to make a couple points. Having worked with Les these last 8 years, there is no better champion out there for foster kids than Les. He just he just stays with it when other people are trying to move on to other, and me included, to other subjects. He brings us right back to foster care, because that's investing in our people capital, and it's just so important. And there's nobody better than Les to do that. And I also wanted to say that my wife and I adopted a child out of the foster care system. We went through the system. We saw, the training or the lack thereof, and how stressed the whole system is. There are problems that are, it's right from the very roots. We don't have enough resources for the problem that we have. And a few dollars into the foster care system is going to make a lot more difference in a lot of people's lives than, Les says, upgrading a road.
All right. Harry, thank you. You want to say hi to...
Harry is exactly what fixes the foster care system. He and his wife have been foster parents. They have an amazing family. One adopted child who is the same as their natural children, right, in that family. That's what fixes the system, right? So one of the solutions is more great foster parents like the Crawfords.
And permanency. Harry, thanks for your call.
You bet.
All right. Amanda, I wanted to give you a chance to set the record straight. We were painting a picture of foster care situations, which aren't the best, and you said that if you look at the numbers.
Yeah, in our state, only about 1% of children are actually abused or neglected in foster homes. And so that's what's reported. And I know we hear a lot of horror stories, but I think oftentimes foster parents come in and don't know what they're getting themselves into either. But it's really not a high number.
Right. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, talk@APRN.org. And Karen's on the phone from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Karen.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, my comment was that we applied to be foster parents about 5 years ago when we're both relatively young and healthy and active and educated and have the resources for a child, yet we were turned down. We have two adult children that are college graduates and productive adults now.
Do you know what the reason was?
No, they wouldn't tell us.
Oh.
We didn't qualify. So I would like, I think there should be recourse if somebody tries to be a foster parent and is turned down. They should be told why. And we had fostered children in the past a couple of times, and we'd gone through all the training.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. You got any answers for that, Les?
Sometimes the system doesn't work well, right? I mean, that's every single government and corporate agency in the world. Sometimes it just doesn't work well, right?
Well, we just felt blackballed, and I think we were for some reason, and we couldn't find out why.
Okay, Karen, we don't have an answer for it.
Okay, well.
All right, but I appreciate you calling, and getting it in front of people. This one from Janet, we got no solution on this one either, probably. Hi, we're the parents of three boys. Last son graduates this May. We would be interested in helping young people, but I'm concerned that we would get a child that has issues too extreme for us to handle. What can we do to help?
They can apply to be a foster family, and they can say yes or no.
They can say no, yeah.
Please apply. Please, everybody out there, if you have an inkling to be a foster family, please apply and do it. You don't have to say yes for every referral. I mean, hopefully we'll match the right youth with the right families. But
and you can have your license specific to a certain age of child. It could be a baby, a certain gender, a certain number. So as a foster parent, you can actually pick – But yeah. I think regardless, you're going to have children coming in who have issues, and if you're not willing to take that on, then maybe foster parenting isn't the best thing. But I think if, as long as you're caring and loving and you're willing to treat them as your own, it's not going to be.
Oh, Amanda, you are scarily, brutally honest sometimes.
Well, people need to know coming in, because people can't come in and expect to have children open their arms and want unconditional love from their foster parents, because that's usually not the case. These are children who've experienced abuse and neglect and need people who are willing to step up to the plate and work through with whatever issues that child has with them.
So, I don't know. We got listeners that seem to be wanting to get their hands on things and seem to be wanting to do something. So I guess we're getting somewhere.
Can I help direct their energy? Well, first of all, this is an aside. I've been given a lot of credit. This was a bipartisan move this year. Virtually every person in the legislature stood up and did this year. Now we have to get it by the governor. We don't have any indication that he has any desire to veto any of this, but we have to get a signature on both the budget items and the bill that passed. So if folks have an interest in letting the governor know that they support the foster care reforms that passed the legislature, even a two-sentence email, it's sean.parnell@alaska.gov. Or call our office and we can get you information. That's 269-0106. The governor needs to know their support for this stuff, or else why would the governor care, right? So he should hear from you, and that would help a lot. When we get the mentorship program up and running, Alaska Community Services has started a pilot project. But when we get the full mentorship program up and running statewide, sign up and be a mentor. If you want to be a CASA, sign up and be a CASA. Call our office again, 269-0106. CASAs do amazing work. There's so much out there you can do. And just so you know, Amanda and I have started a lot of sort of volunteer, no-cost things to improve the system as well. It's not always about money. But there's a lot to do out there.
We have a comment from Carol saying, what can be done about the fear? There may be many people who might want to be foster care providers, but they're just worried about things like we just heard. What can you say to them in 45 seconds?
You just have to jump in feet first. No, I don't. I don't know what the answer is to that. And I think it's going to the training and the orientation for foster parents and asking questions there and getting over that hurdle at the front end and seeing if it's really for you. But I think you can learn a lot in that first orientation and training.
Okay. Do you have a phone at your office if people want to get in touch with you? Is that possible?
Yeah, people can call my office. That number is 339-4419.
All right. Amanda Mativer, thank you so much. Facing Foster Care in Alaska. Thanks for being with us. Les Garrett, thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Amanda.
All right. And I want to thank Connie Huff and Dave Waldron, Pat Yak, and Josh. Our crew today. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the University of Alaska Southeast, providing the challenge, the balance, the community, offering new degrees in geography and environmental studies and resources. Information at uas.alaska.edu. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.